You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio. This is your host, Dr. Hal Schurz, and each week we bring you the stories, the information that doctors are discussing among themselves in doctor's lounges all over the country. We provide for you the information that you will need to fight for your health care freedom. The Docs for Patient Care Foundation sponsors this show. The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is the only physician-led, physician-run healthcare think tank in the country that is run by actively practicing doctors who know everything that there is to know about the delivery of healthcare, about the business of healthcare, about healthcare policy and politics. We are advocating for ideas that promote the doctor-patient relationship and promote healthcare freedom. We need your help. If you like this radio show, which we bring to you each week with my co-host, Dr. Michael Karuchik, please go to our website, www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org or d4pcf.org, docsforpatientcare.org, and generate donate generously to our foundation so that we can continue to bring to you the quality shows that we bring every week and do the work that we're doing on behalf of the patients of America. Today, we're going to have a little fun. I have my good friend and partner in crime in the Docs for Patient Care Foundation, Dr. Dick Armstrong, joining me, and we are going to talk about some personal stories that Dr. Armstrong has experienced and how they relate to you and your issues about health care and what Obamacare has done to your health care. And we just recently wrote a op-ed that appeared yesterday in townhall.com that looks into one of these personal stories called The Human Toll of the Bureaucratic State in Healthcare. Dick, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm wonderful.
Well, let's jump right into this. You know, we wrote this town hall piece yesterday, which has gotten a lot of attention. And the basis for writing this really stemmed from a story that you told to me that, you know, I think is important for you to share with everyone.
Right, Hal. I think that, you know, to back up a little bit, what many people may not have realized was that in 2010, at around the time that the Affordable Care Act passed, the Office of Management and Budget made a prediction that about 20% of hospitals, and specifically rural hospitals nationwide, would close by 2020. And this wasn't a political statement. It was just a economic statement based upon the projections that they made about where funding would be going for healthcare. And so, you know, a lot of people kind of glossed over that and maybe thought, well, no, that's not really going to happen. It's not going to affect me. You know, we're doing fine out here in rural America. But it's affecting us. My own hospital, which is a critical access hospital in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and it's affecting us in a big way, with many of these things causing us to have about a $2 million net loss to the bottom line in 2014, which was kind of predictable if you looked at it, but was a surprise even to the board of this hospital. And so it's caused layoffs of individuals and has put the hospital at financial risk in a great way.
You know, the story that you told me, Dick, really touched me about the boardroom at your hospital.
Well, right. I you know, we have had to deal with some major financial issues. One of them has been the introduction of electronic medical records, and we've talked about this on the program often. Maybe people don't understand what happened here, but Electronic medical records were touted to be a wonderful thing because back in about 2007, the RAND Corporation did a survey of some early adopters, physician, techie, geek adopters of electronic medical records who all thought they were wonderful ideas, and that was because these doctors had built their own systems for their own practices. But that turned into an editorial in the New England Journal of Medicine, which basically said, oh, 95% of doctors like electronic medical records because they're going to make your lives easier, they're going to improve your efficiency, they're going to reduce costs, they're going to decrease errors, and they're going to make it easier for everybody to communicate. So that ended up being pushed into the HITECH Act in 2009, which was part of the stimulus bill. And the government gave $30 billion out nationwide to incentivize hospitals to put these systems in. Well, you know, they really weren't the same systems that these custom doctors in 2007 were talking about. They were just a box that said, oh, here's a computer and put it down on your desk and it's going to make your life better. It doesn't work that way. Healthcare is much more complex than that. And so now we're seeing the results of that in this meaningful use program, which was part of HITECH. And hospitals all over the country bought into this idea.
Tell what meaningful use is, please.
Meaningful use was the stepwise program that incentivized hospitals and physicians' offices to install these systems. So the computers would have to do certain things like report metrics to the government, do e-prescribing, meaning you could electronically prescribe drugs, have patient portals. The problem is a one-size-fits-all solution for everybody in America doesn't work. Some places might want to have adopted certain things, and other places other things, and that's what happens in a true market. So if the market was allowed to develop these things, they would have been much better.
But this was a carrot-and-stick phenomenon because there's different parts to this meaningful use.
Right. Right. And The problem is a lot of the people that were picking these systems were not physicians, and so they were hospital administrators, and they bought into the idea that this was going to be wonderful, including our own facility. And so we, in late 2013, installed a new system, which was extremely expensive, and included something called Computer Provider Order Entry, or CPOE, which it's another one of those acronyms that nobody understands, but what it means is instead of doctors being able to just sit down with a pen and a piece of paper and write orders to nurses or whoever else in the hospital they need to instruct the nurses how to take care of their patient, they now have to enter them into a very difficult computer interface. So 30 seconds of pen and paper turns into 20 to 30 minutes of sitting at a computer trying to figure out how to order the things that make common sense for your patient. When we did that in our hospital, I told my CEO that when they instituted that in the emergency room, all of the ER doctors were going to resign. And he said, oh, that can't possibly be. Well, that's exactly what they threatened to do. But the problem is they really were stuck because all of the other hospitals were doing the same thing. So they could resign here and then go 60 miles down the road and they'd be confronted with the same problem. So they had to kind of, for lack of a better term, suck it up and try to figure it out. And it's been incredibly disruptive, financially and from a morale standpoint. I think this is a story that's playing out in hospitals all over the country, but it hurt us tremendously here.
And so how did it play out in your boardroom?
Well, in the boardroom, it has caused the hospital to hire a consultant from New York City, Berkeley Resource Group, to figure out how to deal with the financial losses. And, of course, because of this meaningful use program, they want to keep it going because now we have this great investment. We got some meaningful use payments, but they were nowhere near enough to cover the overtime expenses, the IT expenses, and the decrease in productivity. So it's resulted in us having to lay off key people in our small town. So, you know, literally, we stood in the room when one of the managers in our operating room services had to be laid off, and he was blindsided. I mean, it was totally unexpected, and essentially what they said is we're having to eliminate your job because it's not essential anymore. And he was, everybody in the room cried. It was awful. And this is a small community. So, you know, this has, incredible emotional impact on the town, and it's still happening now. I mean, we're struggling with it daily.
And the sad part is that your hospital was running in the black. They were profitable before all of this, all of these Obamacare mandated changes were instituted.
That's correct. That's correct. I mean, we had our ups and downs like everybody does, you know, the variables in the cycle, but we were able to keep our head above water. And one of the things about our small hospital that we've been proud of is, as opposed to many of the small community hospitals in America that have been purchased by larger health systems, we decided years ago that we were going to be independent and maintain ourselves on our own, because that was the best thing for the community. This has really put a nail in that, but even worse than that, the larger systems are also struggling with the same financial issues. So we really can't go out at this point and say to somebody 100 miles away, please bail us out. They don't have any desire to do that. So we are really in peril because, you know, it may end up that we're one of the statistics that the OMB talked about in 2010.
So let's talk about those statistics. So far, since 2010, and we wrote about this in our op-ed yesterday, 56 rural hospitals have closed their doors, and there are another 283 rural hospitals across America that are teetering on the brink of closing, and 35% of rural hospitals are operating at a financial loss, and that is a staggering number, because this is the number of individuals who are receiving their care in a rural hospital, I believe, is 1 in 4. Isn't that correct?
Right, that's right.
So we're talking about a quarter of the country who are getting their health care in a hospital near them will potentially no longer have access to those facilities, to those physicians. What's going to happen to them, Dick?
Well, they're going to have to drive hundreds of miles, and in our own personal situation here, it would be the death knell for the community. This is a small community. We the town itself is about 3,500. We serve about 17,000 patients in a very very large geographic area, but the closest medical center is either 2 hours south or 2 hours west, and these people would have to drive to get that care.
You know, there are a lot of reasons why the rural hospitals are hurting, but they all circle back and point back to Obamacare, don't they?
Well, that's part of it. And then the other issue is, and I would have to explain this, in the early 1990s, because of the need for rural facilities and the fact that some of them couldn't maintain on their own, there was a critical access hospital law passed, you know, which defined a certain number of geographically isolated hospitals like ours that really needed to be there to take care of the local population. And so they were paid in a different manner from the community hospitals, which were under the Medicare DRG program. And this thing was politicized. It started out with about 90 critical access hospitals, and now there's 970 of them. So the politics
30 seconds,
of it,
Dick.
Go ahead.
30 seconds.
So the politics of it made it possible for hospitals that really weren't necessarily critical access to become them, like hospitals, say, 15 miles outside of the city limits of Milwaukee are critical access. So it's hurt the people that are really trying to do the work in rural America.
Mm. Well, you know, this is just another aspect of the human toll that Obamacare is having on patients across America, not just on the physicians and the hospitals who provide care, but the actual patients. And we'll talk a little bit more about some of the personal stories, Dick, in the next segment in Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your health care freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's D-O-C-S, the number 4, patientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak. Have you ever wondered what doctors talk about amongst themselves? If you do, join us on the Doctor's Lounge and hear the doctors' conversations amongst themselves. Join me and my co-host, Dr. Hal Schertz, every Thursday morning, 8 to 9 a.m.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
You're back in the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio. This is your host, Dr. Hal Schurz, with my good friend and guest, Dr. Dick Armstrong. We have been spending the first segment talking about some of the problems with rural hospitals and how they are in trouble. There is a problem with Obamacare causing these hospitals to implement expensive and wieldy systems that don't really even help health care or patient care at all, do they, Dick? The issue about these electronic medical records that are so great, that were supposed to help doctors communicate and help there be flow through the healthcare world, really aren't helping at all. In fact, they're hurting, aren't they?
Well, right. And to get back to that point, and we've talked about this many times, there's nothing wrong with the idea of digital communication, but it should have been allowed to develop on its own. So, you know, Americans are very used to using computers. We use computers to do our banking. We use computers to do our shopping. We get things from Amazon. When we do those things, the computers work very well. But an interface was built on top of a billing and coding system, the CPT system, that they tried to kind of tack on medical care to. And it's just not the way doctors work or communicate. What we do is very complex, and it can't be fit into these templates and boxes like the government would like us to do. So it should have been developed in an organic market where doctors were allowed to purchase devices and equipment that actually helped them work. People are beginning to recognize that now, but the inertia from the financial point of view and the politics is very difficult to overcome.
So That's a great segue into another personal story that you've shared with your friends about your father-in-law recently. Let me just set the table for the audience. This isn't just an Obamacare issue. I think that there has been an erosion of the quality of care in America over the last several decades. I think you would agree with that, Dick, wouldn't you?
Definitely.
And Obamacare, the problems that have been present in healthcare, the warts in the system, have been exposed because of the demands that Obamacare is putting on the system. So it's a system that needed some help, some reform, some tweaking, little bolstering in some areas. And instead of helping the situation, Obamacare sort of threw gasoline on a burning fire. And in the one aspect where it has really hurt patients and patient care is something we touched on in the first segment, which is the implementation of the electronic medical record, government style, and the mandate for meaningful use, which has been now strengthened by the passage of the SGR fix, the doc fix bill, which we can talk about. But the problem is, and has been, that if you are a patient in this country, you do much better if you have a an somebody who is either advocating for you, who is looking out for you in a critical care situation, or both. And you never expect this to happen to you, but it happens to us all. And Dick Armstrong, unfortunately, had to live through several very trying days of this on the other end of the healthcare coin. He had to be a family member for an ill patient instead of a healthcare deliverer. And he did not like what he saw, and it was in large part because of the electronic medical record and the problems that's caused. So I've set the table, Dick, and I'd like you to share your personal story, if you don't mind.
No, I don't mind. One of the things, I guess the way to set the personal story is to say that doctors and nurses primarily have historically wanted to use the majority of their time to care for their patients. That's what we're all about, patient care. That's why we are the Docs for Patient Care Foundation. But there are many things that have gotten in between us and our caring for patients, and one of the big things is the corporatization of medicine and then the demand to use these cumbersome electronic systems to try to deal with patient care. So my father-in-law had a recent episode of congestive heart failure and was admitted to our regional medical center and underwent a cardiac catheterization, which, you know, is to identify whether or not your arteries to your heart are blocked. And he had one blockage and he had a stent placed, and that all went relatively well. But then after the procedure and the recovery from that procedure, it was done up on a normal floor because the catheterization lab people weren't working on Saturday, so they had the nurse come up and do the recovery. So it went well, and we went out to lunch and came back to see how he was doing, and I was the first one to walk in the room, and there was no one with him. The nurse that had been supposed to be with him was three doors down typing on a computer. So I looked at my father-in-law, and he didn't look good, and I asked him how he was, and he said he was short of breath. He said, "I feel like I did yesterday." So I looked at the monitors, and I could tell, because I'm a medical professional, that there wasn't something quite right about this, so I got the nurse. And she said, "Oh, gee, I don't know," and I said, "Well, you need to call the cardiologist." So she called the cardiologist, and he gave her orders over the phone of drugs to give and things to adjust to help him while the cardiologist was on the way. She went to the desk at the nursing station, and the nurse said, "You have to enter it in the computer." And the cath lab nurse said, "Well, I'm from the cath lab. I don't know how to do that up here." And she said, "Well, I can't give you the drugs because you have to enter them in the computer." And she said, "Well, this is a verbal order from the doctor." And she said, "Well, I can't give them to you." And the nurse said, "Well, don't you have them here in your crash cart?" She said, "Yeah, but I can't honor a verbal order. We're not allowed to do that." So I heard all this, and I went out to the desk and said, "Wait a minute. My father-in-law is getting worse as we speak. This is nonsense. Get the cardiologist up here right now." And so this went on for about 10 minutes. I mean, it was obvious that the nurse at the nurse's station was afraid to break the protocol. She was more afraid of getting punished than taking care of the patient. That's the point. That's the big point here. And that's happening nationwide. So I wrote this story, and I put it up on the website CIRMO, and I put it up on the American College of Surgeons Communities blog. And everybody has agreed with me that this is happening everywhere. It's not just me. We've been talking about this for years. And so, you know, what would happen if I, a doctor, hadn't walked in the room? Probably my father-in-law would have had a cardiac arrest. Might have died. You know, and this is the reality of what's happening nationally. This is not something that's a foreign problem. It's happening to everybody everywhere.
So this is such a moving story to me, because we all have elderly parents who are going to be in the same situation, and we live, you know, hundreds of miles often from our parents, and we can't necessarily be there for them, even if we are physicians and know better. So what hope is there for people on the path that we're on?
Well, I think the hope is, the only hope, Hal, and we've talked about this many times, is that we need to speak up. And that's what this radio show is about, and that's what the Docs for Patient Care Foundation is about. We need to educate the public, and I think they feel it. I think they feel this disconnection. We know when we go into our doctor's office, if the doctor is spending, you know, more time typing information into a computer than actually looking at us and talking to us, there's something wrong. That's really not patient care. We're moving resources in the wrong direction. We ought to be moving resources to make it easier for all of our nation's physicians to care for patients. We ought to be developing systems that make the job simpler. We ought to be able to develop systems that make it much easier for patients to communicate with their doctors. And some of those things are happening, and we could talk about that if you want, with sure. Other things outside of the government control, like direct primary care practices.
Let's hold that for the next
sure.
segment, because we're going to get into some of the positives.
Right.
I wanted to just wrap this issue up, because, you know, this is such an important issue, because none of us want to see patients compromised because of what's happening. So yes, we speak up and we alert the public about what's going on. But what can people do, Dick? Tell everybody what they can do.
They can begin to talk to not only their local physicians. They can talk to their legislators. They can write letters to the editor, to their newspapers. They can talk to their congressmen. It's very hard for people to understand these complex issues, but it's very easy for them to understand what it means when they almost lose a loved one because somebody's paying more attention to a computer than they are to the care of the patient.
You know what? I would love it if we can get the people out there who are listening to share their personal stories and send it to us through our website.
Mm-hmm.
You know, can you tell people how they can do that?
Sure, they can go to www.docs4patientcarefoundation.com. I think it's
.org.
Yeah, I always forget that. And log in and make comments on the stories that we're presenting here. The story that you're hearing was talked about a little bit on that site. Our article is on that site. You can comment on all of those things. You can also go to our Facebook page, which is the same thing, and add your comments on the Facebook page.
But we would love to collect personal stories, because we have opportunities to talk to people who are policymakers and share these stories. And I think that the more stories that we collect, the more voices that we have, it's going to resonate.
It's resonating already. There are many of the larger organizations that are very interested. They're hearing the same stories from their members. And frankly, in order for us to make it the large changes, we need to hear from the grassroots memberships of all these organizations, because they're all experiencing the same thing, and they're very frustrated and upset.
Dick, you know, when people do speak out and they call their legislators and they tell them about these things, what do they say? What do these people in Washington or in their state houses, how do they respond to this?
Well, often, as you know, and we've experienced, they don't understand what's going on, and so they need to be educated about what's going on. And I guess, you know, as a plug for our organization, if patients want to tell their legislators how to find out what's going on, they should mention that they should talk to the doctors from the Docs for Patient Care Foundation, because we've been honest with America about what's going on. And so often there are other agendas that interfere with that honesty, and there's nothing better than being transparent and honest about caring for patients, and whether they're your father-in-law or your neighbor down the street or your mother or your child, you know, you want the best care for those people.
Absolutely. Well, that's a good comment to break on, and we'll come back to the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's D-O-C-S, the number 4, patientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
You're back in the Doctor's Lounge. My guest today is Dr. Dick Armstrong. We're having a great discussion about problems in healthcare because of Obamacare and what people can do. And there's a woman who is advocating for patients and got the attention of our of the station owner and our board operator, David Moxley. The woman's name is Pat Rulo, and she is going to be hosting a weekly show starting next week that is going to follow this show called Speak Up and Stay Alive. And it's pretty much her idea that was generated because of the issue that we're talking about that you just shared, Dick, about, you know, advocating for a family member who isn't getting the kind of care that they need to get. And she created a show around that, which will segue very nicely from what we do on our show.
That's wonderful. And that's what needs to happen. The more grassroots patient support we get for the changes that need to occur, the more the policymakers will begin to pay attention.
Now, healthcare, much to the chagrin of many people in Washington and in state politics, is still a huge political issue, isn't it?
Oh, definitely.
It reared its ugly head once again 2 days ago on election night in Kentucky when it was used as a political issue to get a governor elected.
Right. Yeah, I saw that. And unfortunately, and as we've learned, honestly, both sides of the aisle politically need to be educated about the things we're talking about. And we know that, and that's fine. As a nonpartisan foundation, we need to be able to develop ideas that come directly from physicians and healthcare workers that appeal to both sides of the aisle and solve problems, and that's what we're about.
Absolutely, and nobody who is involved in making healthcare laws is untainted. They all seem to gravitate to where the money is, don't they?
Well, right. There's very, very large financial influences. One of the problems that we talked about with the EMR system and the transfer of government money from the taxpayers to these huge vendors is that, you know, the government picks what's going to happen. So, for instance, Judy Faulkner, who is the CEO of Epic in Wisconsin, was a large financial bundler for the Obama administration and had great influence. And you know, it's almost sick if you look at what has been done with money from the taxpayers at the Epic headquarters in Wisconsin. I mean, she is an aficionado of Harry Potter, so they have a Harry Potter cafeteria, and she wears Harry Potter outfits to work, and she flaunts the money like it were hers. And it makes me ill to see that when patients are out there suffering and hospitals are going broke trying to adopt these poor systems, and this is being supported by taxpayer money. It's just it's unconscionable.
And it's not just the we're picking on electronic medical records today.
But there's more.
There's lots more, isn't there?
Yes. Yeah, oh, sure. The hospital, the corporate hospitals. I mean, if people want to understand what's going on in the diversion of funds from patient care, they should listen to Dr. Keith Smith from the Surgery Center of Oklahoma, who's delved into this incredibly well, and some of the other people that we've had on the show.
Keith testified last week at the Florida legislature, didn't
he? That's right, and his testimony was very powerful. And of course, the hospital corporate people don't like this because of the political influence and the way that they've been able to set up the laws in their favor. They have become very bloated bureaucratically and financially, and they are not the benevolent systems that we used to think our hospitals were, say, 3, 4, or 5 decades ago.
Three, four, five decades ago, hospitals were simply hotels that were catering to the customer, which was the physician that decided to honor this hospital and put their patients in it.
Right. And the medical staff, the organized medical staff, made the rules. And they essentially ran the medical portion of the hospital. That has completely turned around. And that was a gigantic complaint. I just went to a leadership meeting of the American College of Surgeons by invitation in Chicago a couple weeks ago. There were surgeons in the room from Cleveland, from New York, from all over the nation, academic, urban, rural, employed, private. Their major complaint was they have lost their autonomy to take care of their patients. That was the number one complaint. The second down on the list was having to use EMR systems, which don't work very well. But the biggest complaint was that their leadership has failed them and that they have lost the autonomy to be able to direct their patient care. It's a crisis.
You know, some people would say, you know, when we were young and we listened to the, quote, old-timers, you know, we considered them curmudgeons, or we thought that, you know, they were living in a different time and that, you know, times change and people need to adapt. Are we now the curmudgeons, or are we right?
No, I don't think that we're the curmudgeons. I think we're a combination of two. There was a very powerful address that Dr. Anna Ledgerwood from the American College of Surgeons gave to the American Surgical Society this last spring, where she pretty much blasted the leadership of medicine in America and said, you know, we are the doctors. We've been trained for years and years to be who we are and what we are, and we've given up that mantle of authority and leadership to outsiders unintentionally and over time, because we thought that they could maybe manage the, quote, business of healthcare better than we could, that we would take care of patients, let them manage the business. That was a mistake. The business of healthcare is our purview as well.
Well, that's what we've always been told, right? We've been sold a bill of goods that, you know, we're not good business people, we're not politicians, we're scientists, and we should focus on that and let other people take care of it.
Well, right, but when you let the other people take care of it, then suddenly you have this major intrusion, and what's happened and what happened in the meeting in Chicago happens. You've lost your ability to direct your own patient care.
Well, I'd like to frame this differently. It's like the fox guarding the hen house. Healthcare is a $2 trillion annual economy. That's a lot of money.
Right.
And people see that money and they say, how can I get a bigger piece of that pie? And that's what has, in my opinion, and I'm sure you probably share this as well, that was the motive behind trying to get doctors to abdicate their responsibility or their position of authority to others.
Right, and I think one of the things that I think is very powerful is I really do believe that the American public would like their doctors to be in control of their health care, and they honestly don't understand right now that they aren't. So we need to bring that back, and we need to bring it back constructively. You know, there's a lot of anger out there. We've talked about this too many times, and you can be angry, and there's lots of reasons for us to be angry. But anger doesn't get you a good audience.
No, and we learned that, didn't we, at the State Policy Network meeting?
Mm-hmm.
Who is to share with the audience one of the very positive messages?
Well, we met Arthur Brooks, who's the president of the American Enterprise Institute, and Arthur has a very interesting history, which we don't have to go on here. But his message is this, and that is that the ideas that we are talking about, not only in healthcare but in nationally, have lifted more people in need, in poverty, in the world up than any other ideas in the history of mankind. And we should present that as a positive, forward-looking issue to allow other people to embrace what we're doing, bring them in, help them realize that honest work is a good thing, that excellent medical care is a good thing, that caring for your patients is a good thing, that caring for people that don't have the means to care for themselves is a moral obligation and a good thing.
Right.
We've all believed that.
And you know, it's very interesting because reading his book and listening to him and thinking about this, you know, the ideas that have been foisted upon us by those who are trying to control more of our lives, they take these issues and they own them. And then they present their view of how things should be, whether that means that healthcare is a right and should be provided for everybody by the government, or whatever it is. And if you disagree with that, then you're a bad person. If you disagree with what the left is saying about healthcare, you're no better than a climate change denier or a homophobe or a racist. And so we need to own those issues. Yes, we believe that healthcare needs to be provided, and this is how we do this.
Right.
Not your way, which is not necessarily in the best interest of people, but the right way, and that's what we're all about.
Right, and you know that individuals need to be responsible for their own lives, and you know when they need help, they should get it.
Yes,
you know,
they
and
should.
As societies, we should find ways to help them, but we can't. You know, it's a big philosophic discussion, but we can't. It's not compassionate to bankrupt the a government or America because of some ideologic push. You
right.
know, and that's what's been happening.
So tell everyone what Docs for Patient Care Foundation has been doing recently, and we'll finish up in the last segment with this as well.
Well, we transformed from a membership organization to a foundation. I think people mostly know that now. And we're nonpartisan, a 501c3 foundation. And we have decided to focus on three major issues for the next several months, possibly through the next year. And that would be direct primary care, which we can talk about in the next segment. Maintenance of certification, which is a gigantic issue for physicians nationwide. And the elimination of certificate of need laws in the states nationwide to allow entrepreneurial doctors and other people to do the things in healthcare, like develop the surgery centers of Oklahoma and other businesses, some of which we may not even be aware of now, without having to ask the state permission to do it.
And you left off a fourth, and we're on a hard break right now, but the fourth one, which we're also very much involved in, is the electronic medical record and
right,
healthcare
right.
Information technology.
That's
and,
right.
And so that's what our focus is moving forward. And we will finish this show in the last segment and expand on this moving out in the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's D-O-C-S, the number 4, patientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
This is Daryl Pullis inviting you to listen to America's Homegrown Veggie Show right here every Saturday morning at 10 Eastern Time. Great guests, great tips, and valuable information about growing your own vegetables, fruits, and herbs.
This is Dr. Susan Blank, host of Detailing Addiction and medical director of the Atlanta Healing Center. Please join me on Tuesday afternoons at 4 p.m.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
This is Hal Schurz wrapping up the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio with my guest, Dr. Dick Armstrong. Dick, you said in the last segment the issues that we're focusing on. So I would like to take this opportunity. We don't have you on the show all that often to tell everyone about the Docs for Patient Care Foundation, what our vision is.
Okay, well, if I had to put it in a small capsule, I would say that our vision is that we would like to become the only physician-run healthcare policy think tank and the largest one in America in the next several years. And I think we can do that. We have received a tremendous amount of support recently, beginning with our meeting at the summit conference in Colorado, which was put on by Dr. Mike Strickland and the Let My Doctor Practice people, which was a segue into becoming involved with meetings with the Physicians Foundation in Texas, and those plans are going forward. We met with the State Policy Network in Grand Rapids, Michigan, which was 1,000 people from around the country who deal with healthcare policy and economic policy and all kinds of legislative policies, and we were the only doctors there. We were the only doctors that they had to ask questions to about how physicians think about these things in America. Because of these efforts and because of our participation in things like CIRMO, which is a physician's blog, 460,000 physicians in the world talking every day about medical care, and because I've been talking on the American College of Surgeons website, I got personally invited to come to a meeting with the leadership of the American College of Surgeons in Chicago, where these ideas were shared for the first time in my recent memory among the leadership of the American College and all these surgeons from around the country who are concerned about the same issues we're talking about here. And then we met with the Physicians Foundation, which is a group of made up of 20 medical societies in America who made money from a lawsuit against Aetna in 2003 and developed a foundation to support physicians' leadership.
It was part of the settlement. They had to give a large amount of money to create the foundation.
Right.
For the
we met with them in Austin, Texas last month and are working on collaborative efforts to put together meetings and other things in 2016 to promote some of the things that we've been talking about today. What we found is we were, and to blow our horn a little bit, we were correct in 2009. We published a physician's prescription for healthcare reform back then. We put it out as our policy guidance for our foundation in late 2013 into 2014. And these ideas, if you look at the history of where medicine has gone in America, these ideas are solid ideas which really need to occur. And we believe that physicians should be the leaders to shepherd these ideas through the nation. I guess I couldn't say it better than that, Hal.
Well, you know, I don't think you could. And, you know, there's a lot of excitement right now in the country because there are alternatives that are now being developed, workarounds, if you will, to Obamacare.
Right.
And one of the big ones, which we've talked about more on this show than I can recall, is direct primary care, which is an incredible concept, and it's really quite interesting. I was at a couple of dinners, one with one of the ranking members of the CMS, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, in D.C. And he didn't even understand about direct primary care. And once I explained it to him, you know, the lights started going off about, wow, you can actually save the system money and get people doctors and get them seen. And on a separate note, I was at a dinner party two nights ago, and I was talking to some physician friends of mine who are asking, well, what am I doing these days? That's a long conversation, you know, and a very boring one for my wife, who has to listen to this all the time. But I was telling them about direct primary care, and one of the doctors who I was talking to happened to be a concierge doctor and had not heard of direct primary care.
I think we should explain the difference between direct primary care and concierge medicine.
Please do.
Well, direct primary care, and I'm proud to say that Dr. Lee Gross, who's the president of our foundation, was a pioneer in this in southwestern Florida. He has a direct primary care practice called Epiphany Direct Care. And what it is it's like, if you can think of like a gym membership. So a patient pays a fee per month to belong to Lee's practice, and in that fee they get a very transparent a group of services. For him, 25 visits a year. Anything that he can do in the office, screening, mammograms, pap smears, a lot of things. And then he also has negotiated major price discounts with laboratories, imaging centers, and other services so that, for instance, and I'll tell my own personal story, my physical examination laboratory here in my hospital cost me, the laboratory work just alone, cost me $786. If I had gotten it through Lee's practice in Florida, it would have been $28.
Maybe you should change doctors, Dick.
Yeah, I know. Same thing. And when we present this at meetings, people's mouths drop open.
They sure do.
Because you can show that direct primary care, straightforward standard medicine, you go to your doctor's office, is not expensive. It doesn't have to be expensive. It doesn't have to be run through an insurance plan. Lee does a great job of presenting this, and he's been going all over the country doing this. But the difference with concierge medicine is when you have, in concierge medicine, you're paying an extra fee on top of your insurance, which you already have, for access to that concierge doctor. So the concierge medicine doctor still bills your insurance company. You're just paying a membership fee, whatever they charge. Some are $100 a month, some are much more than that, so that you can call that person and get into them quickly anytime.
It's having your own private healthcare concierge.
That's right. That's right.
And the costs are still, you know, enormous. If you
have a health
insurance plan that may cost you $16,000 or $20,000, you still have your $5,000 deductible. Plus,
right,
you're paying, you know, anywhere from $2,500 to $5,000 for the privilege of having that increased access to your concierge doctor.
Right, and people confuse that, and so they accuse the direct primary care movement of being concierge medicine doctors for the rich, and nothing is further from the truth. You know,
no.
What happens with direct primary care is it provides literally low-price health care for the masses, and some of the sickest patients end up being taken care of by direct primary care doctors. It's a very incredible concept. In fact, when Lee presented it to the Florida legislature, one of the Democratic members of the Florida legislature stood up and said, "This is the best thing I've heard since I came to Tallahassee."
Mm-hmm. But, you know, the only problem is that you have to have a catastrophic plan attached to it.
That's right.
And that's the rub. And that's what needs to happen, and the pathway needs to be cleared for that to occur.
And we're working on that.
Right. And how are we working on that?
Well, Lee's working with the Florida legislature, and we've developed, as we network with people around the country, we actually had the opportunity in Texas for Lee to meet one of the vice presidents of Aetna Insurance from Connecticut, who wants to talk to us directly about working to develop these wraparound plans, which can be connected to direct primary care practices. And there are so many other opportunities. I mean, direct primary care can be folded into the Medicaid programs in states so that Medicaid patients can get a portion of their Medicaid money and use it to purchase a direct primary care subscription so they have a real doctor, not an urgent care center, and not an emergency room, a real doctor.
And some real numbers with that so that it has some meaning. So what we're really talking about is to be able to have a doctor like that, it would cost on average between $600 and $800 a year for a patient. So that means that if you're a state and you have a Medicaid program and it costs you $600 to provide a primary care doctor that could give you an entire book of services for an entire year, it would save a state literally billions of dollars.
No, there's no question about it. And people are waking up to this nationwide, and that's just another part of our mission, is to educate the public, our colleagues and legislators about what is possible, what can be done, which is good for all of America, not just the left or the right, everyone.
And the exciting thing is that we're just scratching the surface, and this is very possible. Right now, 13 states have allowed for direct primary care to be categorized as a delivery system and not as an insurance product. This is something that the state insurance commissioners are putting some roadblocks in because they don't want to allow this to occur. But with enough public demand, the pathway for direct primary care will be cleared.
That's right. That's right. We did that in Michigan, and it was a simple. It took a lot of education, and we had a very great senator in Michigan that helped push it through, but it just took a simple change in the insurance code in Michigan to make sure that direct primary care practices are not defined as a risk-bearing entity. That way they are not regulated by the state insurance commission.
Right. Dick, we're coming to the end of the show, so is there anything else that you want to share before we sign off?
Well, all I would like to share is that I'm proud to be working with all of these wonderful colleagues of ours in the Docs for Patient Care Foundation. I couldn't be more excited about what we're doing. Things are moving in the right direction. I hope that people are listening to the program and will continue to tune in, go to our Facebook page, go to our website, and hopefully generously support what we're doing. We will not disappoint you. We're committed to this.
And I share that also, and I'd also like to thank our strategic partners who have been so instrumental in helping us to get where we've gotten, and those people who believe that what we're doing is the right thing to do and have supported us financially. So we'll have you back, Dick. It was great having you today, and I look forward to coming back in 2 weeks with the next episode of Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio.
Thanks a lot.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.